I'm now going to invite members to interact with Advocate Chiwalule. That's
recording in progress.
I want to check here. Thank you very much. I'll start on the virtual. Mananiso. I have to mix the virtual with, unfortunately, Heron. Milam. Mkweba. Thank you. Kondwe. Yeah. Somebody just gets in the door and raises their head. Doesn't even know what we're doing here. Tseke. Is that all on the virtual? Before you closed off? That Maneli? He was supposed to be here. We start. It's done. Mananiso?
Okay, thank you, Chairperson. And let me firstly welcome Advocate Livuani and as well greet Advocate Mpofu and the team, and greet your our evidence leader and the team, and you as well, and the committee members, Chair. Chair, firstly, I want to check if I'm audible.
Come again?
Chairperson, I want to check if I'm audible.
Yes, we want you to go ahead, otherwise you're eating into your minutes.
Okay, no, thank you, Chair. I'll just do ASAP. Advocate Livuani, my questions are relating to what you have narrated on your affidavit, paragraph 47. The first one is about, I just want to check with you that according to you, leaking of reports in any way constitute a criminal offense, yes or no?
Thanks, Chairperson. Yes, I agree with you. If the information has been leaked in the manner in which you are suggesting, that might constitute a criminal offense.
Okay, no, thank you. You have answered me. Then my second question is, in your experience, was it the first time that criminal charges were opened by the Office of the PP pursuant to the leakages of the reports?
Yes, it was for the first time. Having worked with Advocate Madonsela, there's never been a situation where a report would be leaked to the media and she would go to an extent of saying, I'm going to lay a charge or open a complaint with police. So it was my first experience to hear that the current PP did that.
Okay, thank you, Advocate. And then, Chairperson, my last question is with regards to how did you interpret the events of the SAPS visit during what has transpired as you were relating on your affidavit? And I want to check with you in terms of how could you express your feeling with regards to the that situation? Were you felt intimidated or harassed? And thank you, Chairperson.
Thanks, Chairperson. Yes, I did feel, at first when they came to my new employer's workplace, I felt that maybe they were just making an inquiry, but as the time progresses and when they visited my place, that's when I felt harassed. I felt that somewhere, somehow, perhaps, or maybe somebody had said to them, I'm the person who had leaked the information. That's how I felt. As a result of that, I kept on asking, you know, myself whether that could have came from the side of the PP, that I'm the one who leaked the report. But obviously, that didn't go far, because around about, I think, April, May, there was silence up until today in terms of what the police, you know, investigation was, and whether they were able to find anything in as far as that is concerned. So, yes, indeed, there were, you know, there was a feeling of threat on my part during that period, and it also created a problem, obviously, where I was working, in the sense that now I have to explain why police will have to visit me at my workplace and ask me a whole range of questions, because when they arrived, they explained first. At the time, to the boss, what they were there for, and then came to me to then interrogate me on the issues. So indeed, there were those feeling of being threatened. Yeah, I'll leave it there, Chair.
Thank you, and I recognize Honourable Heron.
Thank you, Chairperson, and. Advocate Chiwa Lule, can I start with understanding the position that you and Advocate Madonsela had around this the amount, the ABS loan? You both agreed that there was an amount that was due, but you regarded the amount as recoverable, and she regarded it as unrecoverable. Am I correct?
Correct.
And did you both agree on the amount that was due?
Yes, we both agreed on the amount that was due.
And is it correct then that the amount would have been the interest only, and you accepted the submissions that, yes, 1.5 billion capital had been paid?
Yes, yeah. So we were quite clear on that issue. And the information only came or arose somewhere around September, after we'd interviewed Dr. Crystals. That's when we were quite certain that the capital or the loan had been repaid. We got information as far as that is concerned. So we were quite clear on that one. The only issue was the issue of interest.
Thank you. And so that does take me to the sequence, because you spoke about the former Reserve Bank Governor Crystals giving lots of evidence to prove, I think you said that he wanted to provide a lot of evidence which would prove that the loan had been paid. So when you came to the conclusion or the finding that there was an amount that was still due, had you considered all of this evidence that Mr. Stolz had provided?
Yes.
So this was after what you called, I think, fairly substantial amount of evidence.
Correct.
That's right. And then finally, just on the complaint was initiated by Advocate Hoffman, and was the complaint limited to the failure to implement the CX report with regards to the Bancor ABSA loan?
Correct.
But the CX report, as you've just said at the end of your cross-examination, implicated or identified, I think you said, 84 potential beneficiaries of apartheid government corruption.
Correct.
But it was only the one issue that was raised in the complaint. Is that correct?
Yes.
So the other 84, 83 in the findings and the recommendations, or the remedial action, where the Commission of Inquiry was recommended, would have been because the CX report identified, yes, a number of other beneficiaries.
Correct.
And that would have been an expansion of the investigation.
Correct.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Heron. I now recognize Honorable Mylan.
Thank you, Chairperson. Good afternoon, Advocate Chiwalule. Let me start with this. Are you aware of any other high profile reports that did not go through the think tank quality assurance process?
On top of my mind now, high profile, I can't can't remember right now, but there were a number of those that went through. I can't remember specifically which one. You know, I had mentioned the Malanda report. I don't know whether one could call that a high-profile report or what. It was signed by the PP. There were other, obviously, Section 79 that would come through, without them going through the think tank. Simply at that time, also because think tank would sit, you know, periodically. You know, it would be like after a while. It was quite a costly kind of an exercise because you have to bring everybody from all the 9 provinces, the senior, the provincial reps, and you need to make sure you pay for them. So that's why it used to happen, you know, I would say quarterly, after every 3 months, you would have that. But the way, I can't really recall.
But the high-profile ones would generally go through the think tank?
Yes, they would go through the think
tank. Okay. At what stage was a report normally considered by the think tank?
So the province or the unit, once it's done with the investigation, that report gets to be forwarded to the Quality Assurance Committee or unit, which is the unit that then is responsible on behalf of the PP. After the PP has confirmed the date for the think tank to convene that particular meeting, it would have done the legal research and everything. When it goes to the think tank meeting, it then advises the think tank committee on the work it has already done, table the report at the think tank. Think tank then advise on whether it is happy with the report or not. If think tank is not happy with the report together with the power protector, the report will then be referred back to the investigator or the head of that particular unit to then close off whatever the gaps that may have been identified by think tank.
So then the think tank would, if they approved it, the output would be a provisional report at that point.
Correct.
Okay. How do you quality assure your own work? Isn't part of the process to have an external eye review it for legal and factual inconsistencies?
Yeah, it would be the case. In many areas to be the case, but obviously if you are working with the boss already at the private office where you work on something and she said, look, I've okayed this, I'm happy with it, please correct whatever that you need to correct, you'd take that as the person who is going to sign the report being happy about the work that has been done. But I do agree with you that those kind of structures in terms of quality assuring and editing of the report, they're quite necessary in the sense that there might be mistakes that you might not be able to identify in your own document.
And in fact, the Concord did find that there were legal and factual errors in the CX report that was issued by the Public Protector.
Yeah, I wouldn't want to comment much on that because I had already left the office.
Sure, sure.
Whether that final report, which I would presume it went to the think tank, the final report, because I worked on the prelim report. The final report, if it didn't go there, I would agree with your vision that perhaps if it had gone that particular route, somebody would have picked up some of the errors that you are mentioning that the Concord managed to identify.
Okay, but even the provisional report, I mean, that you were there when the provisional report was issued, the provisional report, which would normally be an output of the think tank, it still had some of those errors in.
Yes.
Okay, let me move on. In paragraph 6 of your affidavit, you talk about the register for documents in the Public Protector's office. Do you know if that system is still in place?
I'm not sure at the moment, but when I left, that was the procedure.
Okay.
That was followed.
In paragraph 17, you talk about 2 boxes of evidence that you delivered to the PP's office. Were those captured in the register?
They were already in the private office, so I would imagine they were not captured in the register. Because I was working in the private office, so it's information that was already in that particular.
So was it already in the register in that case?
Yeah, it had already been on the register, okay. Were kept by the secretary. So whatever documents that we would receive, they would be kept by the secretary in the private office of the power protector.
Now, in that same paragraph, you talk about the small box, and you say that box contained the transcribed records of interviews. Do you know what became of those records?
If I can just, I'm trying to remember some of these information, you know, that was there. We had transcribed almost everything that the recordings of all the meetings that we had with the people that we had interviewed. They were part of the information that I provided to the Power Protector at the time before I left. Sure. I even left the office. Obviously, I don't know what then happened after that, okay. But I left it then.
It was there when you left?
Yes.
Okay. Were any of those records interviews with state security agency personnel?
I can't really recall whether there was a transcribed one with Billy Masetla, because I remember the former PP had already interviewed him. But all I can recall is that in one of the recorders that were in the private office, we used to have, I think, two, if not three recorders. That particular information was there. When I started with the investigation, I did to verify some of the things. But at the time when we were compiling the report, I did raise it with the PP that I couldn't find some of these recordings, simply because the recorders will be borrowed by other units whenever they're having meetings with the different, you know, departments or government departments that they will be investigating.
So you weren't there when Advocate Mkhwebane had meetings with Minister Mahlobo and Arthur Fraser and Mai Moodley and people like that?
I wasn't there.
You weren't there. Okay. Yes. Were you present at any discussions with economists regarding the role of the South African Reserve Bank?
No.
Okay. And did any of the interviews you personally observed raise the issue of the role of the South African Reserve Bank?
You mean the mandate of
the mandate? Yeah.
No. The focus of that the investigation and all the interviews I attended were mainly on why the CX report was not implemented. That was the main issue that we were pursuing at that particular time. There's nothing that came up that suggested that perhaps we should look at the or revise the mandate of the Reserve Bank in the whole process. That's how I can remember.
Sure. Do you know who removed what Advocate Mpofu called the three TMs, President Mbeki, Minister Manuel, and Governor at the time, Mboweni, in the draft report in the findings, but in the provisional report, they weren't. Do you know who removed them?
I think I had already indicated, Chair, that those were removed after I received the final version of the report. I don't know if you can refer me to the paragraph, but I did indicate that when the report came back to me, there were a number of sure. changes that were made, and this is part of the paragraph that was no longer there.
And that would have been when it came back from Advocate Mkhwebane?
Correct.
Okay. Now, we've heard in other testimony that Advocate Mkhwebane did not want remedial action or findings against politicians. Was that the case here?
I don't think so. I didn't, when it was removed, it didn't come to my mind that it may have been the reason. And I didn't even ask her why that was removed as well. So I wouldn't want to make any conclusive statement about that.
Okay, because that's quite a big jump from going to making a finding that these three individuals need to be admonished or have remedial action taken against them to taking it out completely. Would you agree?
Yeah, it is.
Okay.
I agree.
You noted earlier that the complainant is always kept abreast of progress, but that didn't really happen in this case, did it?
It happened to a certain extent. I would say when I started with the investigation, I communicated with Advocate Paul Hoffman on a number of occasions, you know, telephonically, because I needed to understand certain things. You know, it may have happened that it may not have been happening regularly, and I know he was in contact with the former Power Protector, and because she would tell me that he had reached out and he wanted to understand what's happening. Similarly, he was in contact with the current PP after the former PP left, and also late in December before I left the office. There were certain, you know, engagements that were taking place in that regard.
Okay, because you said that he wasn't provided with a copy of the provisional report, that you only sent it to the implicated persons. Yes. Is it unusual for the complainant not to be provided with a copy of a provisional report?
Yeah,
it is unusual.
It's usual, and I've already explained that there is always a view, and this view has been carried by the office for for a while, and it's a view that is obviously supported by Section 7(9) of the Power Protector Act, which specifically speaks to the issue of implicated parties being afforded an opportunity to then comment on the findings or the evidence that you have, and the findings and the possible remedial actions that the office is likely to come up with in the event that you don't comment and move the Power Protector to a particular view or in that particular regard. So this was the position. All that the complainant had to get was an update on their complaint in terms of where we are and the discussion about when are we likely to release the report. And also, if there are any issues that we feel that we need to check with the complaint, we could check with the complaint. But at this particular stage, there was none that we needed to check with the advocate Paul Hoffman in that regard.
I understand.
You have reached last question. Last one. Thank you.
But Section 7(9) doesn't preclude the complainant from getting a copy of the provisional report, does it? All it says is that the implicated people must get a copy.
Yes, it doesn't.
Or be afforded an opportunity. That's what it actually
correct.
Says.
Yeah, it doesn't. And also, it doesn't mean that you have to give it to the complainant or you sure. can't give it to the complainant. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Thank you very much, Advocate.
All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Mylan, Honorable Mylan. And I recognize Honorable Mgweba.
Thank you very much, Chair. And good afternoon, honorable members, Advocate Mkwebane, the team, and Advocate Chualule. Mr. Chualule, having you read the final version of the report, do you think the public protector broadened the scope of the investigation unlawfully or without justification? Because I've heard you saying that there were changes made to the report of the previous public protector.
Yes. Well, thanks, Chairperson. I wouldn't want to really venture into that part because, as I've indicated, Chair, I left the office when the prelim was out on the 31st of December 2016. What then happened after that and the evidence that was received by the Power Protector, which made her to make changes in some of the proposed remedial action. I wouldn't want to comment much on that unless I'm provided with the evidence. But obviously, there was a part that I was not happy with, which is my own opinion, I guess, because the final decision rests with the PP was just the issue of changing the mandate of Reserve Bank and all those things that were in the final report. I had an interest on it. I had to look at it, and I saw that there were several changes from the provisional report. What necessitated that, obviously, that can only be responded to by the Power Protector and not myself.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chualule. Then the second question, which is the last one, Chair. Mr. Chualule, you have indicated that the BLF, which is the Black Land First, had keen interest in the matter, and the public protector informed you that she had been approached by them. Do you think the public protector may have been influenced by the external people as it relates to the final and the material changes that were effected to the report? Thank you very much.
I wouldn't know, in as far as the final report is concerned, whether there was any a view that came from BLF, that find expression in the report. I do partially agree with her that at the time there were organizations which were obviously not happy that some of the investigations that were taking place in the office at that particular time were not yet finalized, and they wanted to know why, for example, the state capture one was prioritized as opposed to the other one. So those were valid issues that they were raising at the particular time, but there were reasons why certain investigation will take longer than others, So on the part about their view, finding expression, or whether I have a view on that, I wouldn't want to comment on that because I'd already left the office during that particular period. I don't even know whether she met with them after the prelim investigation was issued. So I would reserve my comment on that, Chair.
Thank you.
Thank you. Honorable Gondra.
Chairperson. Vo Chiwalule. In paragraph 5 of your affidavit, you state that not long after Advocate Mokhobane assumed office, you were the only staff member remaining in the private office of the public protector, as other persons were redeployed to other units in the organization. Please confirm how many people were in the private office prior to Advocate Mokhobane assuming office, and how many were redeployed to other units within the organization after she assumed office, and how soon after her assumption of office were these persons redeployed to other units?
Okay, I consider it to be an exodus of you know, there was this thing that happened, Chair, where there was a briefing that was supposed to happen. I think it did happen. It was quite a brief one on the 14th, on the last day of the former PP, where we were called. I remember we were working on reports, and we were called to say we must come in because the new PP has arrived to meet with the public protector. She did the introduction to the current PP to say these are the people who are working here. During that period, I think I was working with Janine Hicks, who was the special advisor to the former PP. She was brought in to speed up the process of quality assurance reports as well. There was also Belinda Moses, who was a senior manager in the office. And there was also Tembin Kosi Dlamini, if my memory serves me well. He was the chief of staff at that particular time, was working with us. The three officials within a few weeks, I think a few days or so, my memory serves me well, they were no longer there, some of those officials. I remember with Ms. Moses, I think she probably left the office early November. And others were then told that they can't work in the private office. They are obviously going to be new people. There were three, the PP had two, I think the former PP had two PAs and a secretary. It didn't take long for them to also be redeployed within the office. I think those were redeployed because there was nothing that the PP could do. They were permanent. So they still, you know, were going to be within the organization, whether she liked it or not. They were permanently employed in the office. I may have left others, but that was a team. So I was then left as the only one, but I did understand why I had to be left there, because I was the only person who was assisting with investigation in that particular space during that time. So it was important that I also do the handover of the report.
Thank you. So you stated in the course of your evidence in chief that a number of organizations, including Blackland First, showed a keen interest in the CX matter. And at some stage, they staged, you know, they were camped outside the office of the public protector. Please confirm if Advocate Madonsela had a meeting with any of these organizations that were camped outside the office. Because we heard earlier from Mr. Kekana that Advocate Mokhobane set up a meeting with Blackland First, and they had wanted to be added as a complainant to the CX matter. So I just need you to confirm whether Advocate Madonsela had a similar meeting with any of the organizations.
If my mom serves me well, I don't think she had any meeting. What happened is that myself and the spokesperson of the PP, I actually firstly met with them. I'd raised the issue with the PP that Mr. Mkhitama and his team, they've been coming to the office and they wanted to meet with her. They wanted to find out the progress of this investigation. I remember, I think I met with them in the boardroom together with other officials, but the public protector, the former public protector, was not part of that meeting. Briefed the public protector. In the weeks that followed, they then started to camp at our gate. That's why I mentioned the KFC issue, Chair. that they were there for a particular period of time, there was also another engagement that I had with them outside, together with the spokesperson of the power protector at the time, where we met with them outside and we were advising them that the PP is working on different investigation and ideas to release some of this investigation, including the CX one, before she leaves the office.
Thank you. You stated paragraph 46 of your affidavit that when senior investigators made inquiries with you in relation to who you had sent the provisional report to, you told them that you had sent the report to SARB, ABSA, the President and the Minister of Finance as the implicated parties for purposes of the Section 79 notices. What of the SSA? Why did you not send them a copy of the provisional report?
These are the ones that I can remember now. Okay. It might be that there was something that was sent to them if they were implicated. But when I was formulating the affidavit, I had to rely on things I could remember, which I'm quite certain that they can be confirmed.
Okay. You told this committee earlier that you felt threatened by the visit from the Hawks and the subsequent attempted...
I didn't get that.
I said he told this committee earlier that he felt threatened by the visit from the Hawks and the attempted search by SAPS of your residence. Did you take the issue up with Advocate Mukwabani or her office? Did you want to find out why you were considered, a suspect in the leak and the like?
No, I didn't.
Why?
I'd already left that office. There was a complaint that has been laid with police. All I had to do during that particular period was to assist the investigation. Obviously, the only time I felt threatened was when people are now visiting my home and they are not explaining who sent them there to do what. Then that's why I said to the police that came there, if you don't have a search warrant, you're not going to search my house. And it ended there. I think they did understand that they had to go through another process for them to do what they were supposed to do. So I didn't reach out to the PP's office. She had opened the case. The issue was in the media space. I always understand a criminal investigation to be that when somebody has laid a criminal case, anyone who may have worked on a particular project that is under investigation is considered a suspect until such time that there is prima facie evidence that can be proven that that person obviously was really involved in whatever wrongdoing.
Regarding the issue of prescription and how it was dealt with in the CX investigation, you go into great detail in paragraphs 35 and 36 of your affidavit, and you detail that Advocate Madonsela was clear that prescription had set in relation to any monetary claim, and as such the remedial action could not include any recovery of funds. However, you said you were not convinced, and your hope was that the implicated parties would not raise the issue of prescription themselves. So am I correct in saying that you agreed with Advocate Madonsela, view, in so far as she, indicated that prescription had set in, and so there couldn't be any monetary, claim. Mm-hmm. However, you said you felt strongly that the issue of a possible monetary claim could be included in the report, and hence you're preparing two reports. Yes. Why did you have this strong view around this? Because she was correcting law around prescription having set in.
Yeah. So the issue there was prescription is a defense in law. So you raise it when someone is claiming something from you, must be raised by you. You must tell me that, look, this thing that you're talking about is prescribed. Then I can say, I've looked at it and I go. So she raised it at that particular time. I felt that because we are doing a provisional report here, there's nothing wrong in testing the waters by writing the report in the manner in which I'm suggesting. Let it be that APSA, the Reserve Bank, Minister of Finance at that particular time raised it and said, but well, why are you touching this issue? Because, there's really nothing here. This thing is prescribed. That was my view at that particular time when I was engaging with her on the issue. And that view, I carried it even when Advocate Mukwabana joined the office.
So when you eventually discuss this issue, the prescription issue with the Advocate Advocate Mukwabani, just get into the details. What exactly did you say to her, and what was her response to what you said?
Okay, so the discussion around this was, it happened when I was handing over the report, the draft report to her. I did indicate that before Advocate Madonsela left, she had made several comments and changes on the document. Some of them I have inserted them, you know, because they were on a handwritten document. I've inserted them and I'm handing over. There was this issue, or there's this issue of prescription, that I have this particular view, which obviously myself and Advocate Mkwebana then shared the same view, in as far as that is concerned. That the issue from my side, she felt that it had not, the debt had not yet prescribed. Yes, so we would move in that particular way. But I did explain to her where I was coming from, in the sense that it had to be a defense raised by whoever that we are saying is owing that particular money.
Thank you, Honorable Gondwe. Honorable Tseke.
Thank you very much, and good afternoon, Advocate Chiwalule.
Good afternoon, ma'am.
How are you?
I'm doing very well. How are you?
Good. In paragraph 41 of your affidavit, you indicated that your understanding was that the PP had not gone through all the information and was not conversant with the matter, the report on the CIX. Do you believe or get a sense that she approached the matter with a preconceived view or predetermined outcome without familiarizing herself with the facts on the matter?
Okay, so the when I handed over the report to her in October, obviously she had the report for a while, you know, and I asked her, I think it was in November, how far she was and everything. So I had that view at that particular time, where I said to myself, perhaps she has not been able to go through all the evidence and the information that I provided to her at that particular time. I don't think there was any motive. I, at the time when I was still in the office, I didn't see that there was any motive around the whole issue. The only thing that I mentioned here, which I was clear, was just the issue about researching the how other central banks work. So that's where I was quite concerned. Where are we going with this? But I've clarified that part already.
Oh, okay, Mr. Advocate Chiwalule. My second question, in your opinion, was it necessary for the PP to have acquired the services of the Economist to finalize that report?
Okay, you are asking me now to venture on things that happened after I'd left the office. Wanted not to air opinions share here, because the opinions sometimes they create a problem for us as legal people. I would have wanted just to leave it there and rely on things that I can back up from my side, where I participated, where probably I would have said to you, if I was there, I would have advised the otherwise, that there's no need for an economist to come in here, because the issue had nothing to do with the economy. That would be my comment. But I wouldn't want to make further comment than the one I've made right now in that regard.
Okay. Thank you very much, but I get your point. My last question is that after reading the final report, because you had keen interest on it, do you think the PP had acted improperly by ordering the amendment of the constitution?
Yes, I do. I do agree. I think there was, I don't know if I should call it an overreach. I don't know. And that's why I raised an issue, Chair, where I was asking what informed that? Where is that coming from? You know, and I heard a version that from the Advocate Mpofu that says, well, the evidence probably led there. I don't know about that. I don't think that was even appropriate to put that kind of a remedial action there. Perhaps there could have been a better way of putting it, because it was more of a directive, as opposed to a proposal. So that's my view, in as far as that is concerned.
Honorable Tseke, continue. Honorable Tseke. Honorable Tseke, you are muted. Okay, she's probably frozen. will check. It's the last time she also got frozen in the middle of her question. We'll proceed to the next member. But before I do that, I see the head of Advocate Mbofu.
Yes, Chairperson, I'm just doing this for the record because I know what your view is, but I have to put it. It is not allowed, Chairperson, for a member to ask questions that says, do you think this and that was unlawful or whatever? Or that answers the question, the very question before the committee. It's not allowed. The irrelevant in law doesn't mean what it means in normal language. And maybe we'll have an opportunity to explain. So that is irrelevant, Chair, because a witness, I can put 10,000 people there. One will say, yes, I think it's unlawful. The other one thinks it's lawful. But that's completely irrelevant, because that's just an opinion of a witness. So it might be good for sensationalism and creating a negative atmosphere, but you should not allow it, Chairperson. Please, and maybe you can get advice from the evidence leaders as to that issue about you. A tribunal cannot accept the views of a witness about the very issue that is before it, because then what's the point? We can call another 100 people who say they think it's lawful, and the other side calls another 100 that say they think it's unlawful. It's completely irrelevant. But as I say, I've tried to explain this before. I just want to put it for the record so that I'm not accused of not having raised it. Thank you.
Thank you, Advocate Mbofu. Thank you for putting it on the record. If it's a point of order, it's not sustained. And because we're dealing with relevance here, and everything else that member has raised is not irrelevant. And I'm not even going to ask the evidence leader for any advice. I'm appropriately ready to do this. So your point of intervention is not sustained, and I proceed to the next member.
Honorable Thank you very Malik. Much. Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Honorable Malik.
Yes.
Oh, thank you, Chair. Greetings to Advocate Chaulule. Maybe if I were to just follow up on a question that could have been asked, just to get the understanding of that paragraph 35, the part about making the choice on the two. I think an important part of what could have been the framework that Mr. Ibrahim spoke to. In this case, would you say the public protector would have raised the prescription issue out of knowledge that exists given the circumstances? And that your suggestion about leaving it to the defense in that regard would mean you were just looking at a point of taking chances, not because you were not aware that exists, given the level at which you were in the investigation. I just wanted to check that, Chair, to confirm if I understood this part. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks, Chair. That would be a correct proposition.
Yeah. Well, thanks, Chair. And just to take it forward then, that in the case of the current public protector, when you were to place this before her, I just want to check again, and I'm testing discretion again, that you presented both options to the public protector, or you only presented what could have been your view. So just to understand how she would have arrived at her own determination. Thanks, sir.
Thanks, Chair. I raised both views with her, and she chose the view that obviously I was also in favor of, which is what I've mentioned now here, that I was also in favor of the recovery of the money. So that view find expression after I had already informed her about the changes that I had made in the draft that I was submitting to her, and that's how the whole discussion unfolded between myself and her. So she knew about the both version. There was no version that I just said, okay, because I'm pushing this, this is the version that I'm going to give it to her only, and she would not know about the other version.
Yeah. Maybe before you cut me, let me just do quickly the two further questions. I had a number of questions to look at, but I'll try and cut them off. I wanted to come to...
You're still within your time.
Okay. I still wanted to come back again to the SSA question, but differently. In that, I just wanted to check from a point of the handover reports, which you are seeing both electronic and in the two boxes. Did you have also the SSA responses or material that relates to how they've interacted with the investigation? Of course, I do take the point you raised in the course of your presentation and responding to questions that you may have not been present in the interaction with DG Masetla. But I'm just saying from the point of material available for handover, were these also part of the documents that were handed over for the consideration by the public?
Correct, Chair.
Okay. If that's the case, Chair, I just want to also complete this point. Will you then say, if you do have both the electronic and the physical documents that are available, that from a point of having worked in the public protector's office, that the cases could be easily traced then in that score, meaning that you did have some case management system in place. And as I say, both electronic as well as documents that get through the register, yes, and so on. So I just want to establish that, Chair, so that I leave that point.
Yeah, no, we quite had a strong system in terms of managing documents in the private office of the Power Protector. So if you lose the hard copy, you'd be able to get the version, you know, the other version that would have been kept by the secretary after that process. Or you would also have it in your own laptop as well, or on the recorder as well, that you would have used for that particular meeting.
Just in valuing evidence that is put by people, and I want to get to this point about the SSA, but starting from this one, that under normal circumstances, did you have a situation as part of considering the value of the evidence put before you, where those that are implicated or remedial actions would have to be made against them, that they themselves will also suggest what remedial action needs to be taken on the matter that you were dealing with them?
Chair, when the Section 79 or the provisional report is issued in line with Section 79, where you are now giving the other, the implicated party an opportunity to comment, those that are implicated will say a whole range of issues, you know, from the evidence you have to the remedial action that you are likely going to propose. They could tell you that if you recommend what we had put for example in the prelim or provisional report, this would have this kind of an impact. You know, perhaps you could put it in this particular way. There would be those kind of proposals. There's nothing that prevent them from doing that. But ultimately, the final decision will rest with the Power Protector as to what then goes to the final version of that particular report.
But then in a case, for example, one witness has led evidence here and made the allegation where necessarily the actual version of what needed to get into the remedial action or the report itself would come from the implicated party. Would you take that as interference or just an issue that maybe the office didn't have capacity to put that up, and then it's more of working together with those to really put a proper report?
No, it wouldn't be seen as an interference in the work of the office. As I've indicated, Chair, whoever that the Power Protector would be investigating would have a right to suggest whatever issues, you know, things that they would want to suggest in an effort, obviously, to resolve the complaint that has been brought. So there will be main suggestions. And those suggestions will be taken into consideration in the final report. Could that be dismissed, or the PP might agree? And that's why you would have areas in the report where the PP would be saying these issues are common cause, you know, as they were raised by the complainant and also raised by the person who is being investigated. So those would be something that would happen during the course of an investigation.
Is your version, therefore, that indeed on this matter, when you say not interference, you'd mean that the PP is not compelled to put, but actually uses his or her discretion to take that forward?
Yes, it is important for the PP to evaluate the evidence that is put before her and obviously be able to make an informed decision and come up with appropriate remedial action that would address the complaint that has been brought forward. It is not something that happened where only what has been proposed by one party will then find expression, unless there is a valid reason for that to find expression. Chair.
I thank you, Chair, for goodness.
Thank you. And I recognize Honorable Paul Angola.
Thank you very much, Chair. Afternoon, Advocate Chiwalule.
Afternoon.
In your affidavit, you make emphasis on two reports, which is the CX report and the Fred Dairy Farm report, which form the basis of the findings of the independent panel of parliament.
Yes.
The first question would be, we'll just do a checklist. I don't have long questions. The first question would be, were you part of the CX report investigation?
Yes, I was part of that.
Okay. Was the mandate and the amendment of the constitution part of the investigation you conducted?
No.
It wasn't.
It wasn't.
Mr. Gigane came here. He's a former employee of his strong views that the entire context that speaks about amendments and the mandate and all those things was completely irrelevant. What is your view on that?
Yeah, the issue of the mandate was not an issue that was before the Power Protector in the complaint. That came to the office of the Power Protector at that particular time. The issue was mainly the implementation of the CX report. That was the main issue that we were confronted with at the time when I was still in that office.
Okay, let's pass quickly on whether it was part of the investigation or not. Does it, in your view, fall within the jurisdiction and the powers of the Office of the Public Protector?
You mean to investigate the mandate?
Both the mandate and the constitutional amendment.
Not at all. Not at all.
Okay. So it was not the constitution that were that was proposed to be amended. Let's say it was just a national legislation.
Yes.
That regulates and governs the mandate of the Reserve Bank.
Yes.
Would it be appropriate for a Public Protector South Africa to bring forward those kind of propositions?
Yeah, I think in a form of a proposal, that could be done. So if you conduct an investigation and you note that the reason there are complaints that members of the public are raising in as far as a particular issue is concerned, you can then came up with something that would then be brought to the attention of the speaker, for example, to say, look, there are these issues that we've identified in a particular investigation, which we think that if an amendment or some form of, you know, a review can be done to ensure that these issues addressed, those could be brought, you know, can also raise that with several ministers, see how best they can be dealt with in a form of a recommendation in that particular regard.
You made utterances when you were having cross-examination with Advocate Mpofu of the virus, actually the difference between a comment and a binding action.
Yes.
When you made an example about what Judge Zondo, Chief Justice Zondo, may have said during the Zondo Commission.
Yes.
So do I understand you correctly that you say the matter of the mandate of the Reserve Bank and the constitutional amendment should not have been part of the remedial action in the CX report?
Yeah. Let me put it this way, Chair. As I've indicated, I was not party to the things that happened after I had left on the 31st of December. And it would be difficult for me to make any, you know, or formulate any view in as far as that is concerned, because I don't know the kind of evidence that it confronted or that was before the Power Protector at the time when she decided that there is a reason to have some form of amendment in that regard. But obviously, at the time when the complaint arose, there was no suggestion whatsoever, even from the side of the complainant, that there is a need to review the mandate of the Central Bank or Reserve Bank in the manner in which it was suggested by the Power Protector in her final report.
Okay, two quick last things. Mr. Kekane accuses the Public Protector of having instructed them not to include politicians in the report on the Friday Dairy Farm report. If you were part of the investigations, the first phase of investigations in that report, was there any indication that points unto any kind of wrongdoing to any politician without mentioning any name?
You're referring to the third day?
The Friday.
Okay. I worked on, I get to know about the Friday investigation at the think tank. In fact, the former PP had raised it with us in the private office that there's an investigation that has been taking quite long in the First State province. It came at think tank, as I've indicated. Advocate Mkwewana was not there at that particular time. It came at think tank, and there were areas that the former PP was not happy with, and she then asked that the report be referred back to the province to then go and close off those gaps that were there. So that's all I can say in as far as that issue is concerned. I don't know what happened after the Advocate Mkwewana joined the office in as far as that particular investigation is concerned, and I would want to leave it there, Chair.
Okay, last issue. The Reserve Bank is accusing the Public Protector South Africa of having ignored and breached Section 7, Subsection 9 of the Public Protector Act, in that after having requested that it be finished with a preliminary report or provisional report before its final publication, the Office of the Public Protector failed to adhere to that request. Do you have any knowledge about such a
You're referring to the correspondences that came through from Reserve Bank even before the former PP left the office?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. There were those correspondences. Obviously, it had to do with the delays on the investigation. But there was always an undertaking that as soon as the investigation is completed, that provisional report or Section 7-9 will then be submitted to all the implicated parties. And we maintained that, I think, until December when they wrote, Reserve Bank, I think, wrote to us again through their internal counsel. They were inquiring again about that. And we did stress or committed that once the investigation is completed, we will ensure that the report is submitted to all the implicated parties.
Okay, thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Ngola. May I now check Advocates Bauer and Advocate Mayosi in terms of Directive 616 and 617. Do you have anything to say?
We don't have any further questions, Chair. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Advocate Chia Walule, any last comments you want to make? We have reached almost the end of your interaction.
Yeah, I just want to thank the committee, thank everyone who has been here. I think, obviously, I expected that it was not going to be an easy engagement. It wasn't an easy engagement, I can tell you. So to be sitting in this seat, but I really appreciate all I was here to do was to assist the committee to arrive at an appropriate decision based on the information I've provided. And I really appreciate you listening to me and also the questions that came through from everyone that participated here. Thank you, Chair.
Yeah, on behalf of this Section 194 inquiry, I want to thank you for availing yourself before today and today, and for the contributions you have made. Hopefully they will assist us in the conclusions that we must make as this committee. You are therefore now formally excused. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much, Chairperson.
Thank you. With that, colleagues and everybody else, the meeting is adjourned. Thank you.
But there is no KFC.